It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champy's Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Welcome to the UGA Sports Live Podcast here from Champy's on Baxter Street. My name is Roddy Nabulsi. I'm joined, as always, by former Georgia coach Jim Donnan. Jake Roos has finally decided to show up. You know, took him a little while, but he's our recruiting savant at UGASports.com. So the recruiting guy is here.
That's my favorite one of so far, I think. Savant.
Got on his seersucker today.
That's right. Yeah, got a seersucker. Yeah, he's looking good.
Conference game.
We have a great show for you today. Georgia practice is underway. We have so much to talk about. I don't know how we're going to get to it all. So let's jump in real quick and give a quick shout-out to our sponsors. Of course, Champy's for letting us be on the – ooh, they just brought us food. The sausage, cheese, and pickle plate, one of my favorites. I was mentioning this last week. A great thing to swing by. And we know a lot of you came by and just scoot that down to my end of the table.
Yeah.
A lot of folks came by last Saturday for the open practice. They came by here. They went by EuroPie. They went by Academia. Shout out to all the people that did that. We thank you a lot. We love it when you take care of the people who take care of us. Also, I want to let everybody know, you need to swing by Athens Ford this week. They have 0% financing on all these vehicles. I'll tell you more about it later on in the show. Big shout out to 365 Game Day for if you need your Georgia gear. Shout out to Academia for the Dom Kolsch and the IQ IPA. Oh, my God, that's good. That's fantastic. And, of course, if you need lunch today, swing by EuroPie or swing by Champy's. And, of course, 11 Live Sports, they're letting us be on their page. We appreciate it very much. I'm going to be doing something with them later on in the week. I'm going to swing by the 11 Live Studios. Be sure to tune into that. And, of course, Cable East out in Statham. And our newest sponsor, Coach, we have a brand-new sponsor. It's Aaron Overhead Doors, A-A-R-O-N. They are out of the Buford, Gwinnett, Cobb area. If you need a garage door repaired, if you need one installed, if you want a custom garage door, if you need your garage door opener fixed, huge Georgia fans, Coach. They know you. They know the team. They know they're members of the UGA Sports. Georgia alums.
Awesome.
They do charity work. They take care of people that need they do some pro bono work for people who can't afford it. They are involved in all the local communities and that whole Northeast Georgia, North Georgia, North Atlanta area. Aaron Overhead Doors, huge fans of the show, big sponsors of the site, huge Georgia fans. So if you need something done around your house like that, don't go to anybody else. Go to the Georgia alum. So Aaron Overhead Doors, go to AaronOverheadDoors.com. Check them out. They're on the front page of our website, UGASports.com. They sponsor our 3-2-1. That 3-2-1 I wrote the other day was a big hit. If it weren't for them, we probably would have written it. So be sure to check out Aaron Overhead Door when you get a chance. Coach, I want to jump right into it. Give us your thoughts so far. What's going on in practice?
Well, first of all, it's great to have football to really talk about. Yes. Instead of
making things up over the summer.
All that. But there are a couple things that have come up that I think all our fans that listen and watch would like to know, that behind-the-scenes thing, because I really don't watch practice that much because I really don't want to say things that I see and then,
That's true.
It's just not fair. But I do feel like there's a couple things. First, the first year we had a practice situation where we practiced out at the intramural fields, and we had the GPS for the players where they would monitor their speed and everything and their how many steps they took in practice and all that. And then last year we moved into the new indoor, and we had to practice some indoors and out. But there was a conflict there going from out to in, and they really couldn't monitor it, both places because of some conflict in the internet, kind of like all of us have different places. But Kirby Smart, which I'm going on the Kirby Smart report, made sure that between last year and this year we were able to utilize that because our kids do go from one place to another and utilization of all the fields and everything. So now they have the ability to monitor them throughout practice at wherever they are. And the one good thing about it, they have a trainer on a computer that's looking at them as far as any kind of heat situation.
Well, like in real time?
Right. Could be over you know, somebody could be overheating, or, and then they got other GAs that are looking to see if somebody's really slacking a little bit, you know, and they don't want to find out about it after practice. But it's really just a great tool. So that's one thing that I feel like the fans would be glad to hear about. The other thing is the general manager in Kirby Smart, from the standpoint, he always talks to his players in real time about where they stand and what they're doing. And you know, we had a situation with DeAndre Baker last year. Hey, do you want to go pro or not? And he did a good job of putting out the facts to him and counseling him and putting him on the right people and all. And the best decision for the kid was to come back because, you know, he's got everything ahead of him. And, well, since fall camp has started, these pro scouts have been jumping in here right and left. And, they, you know, because corners are hard to come by, you know. And I think it was a great move getting DeAndre back, not only for our secondary but for his own situation. And the scouts that I've talked to are really high on him, that have watched him, you know, the improvement he's made since Kirby and Mel have taken over, and his ability to not only cover but tackle and everything. So it was a good move there. And then the third thing is social media. We always hear about social media and people tweeting and texting and all, and how it can harm you and all these different things. So Kirby brought in a social media specialist to talk to our team about it, and I thought that was really smart to from Coach Smart to you know, hit it head on that, you know, we have people come in all the time, talk to them about different issues. I mean, that every coach does that, but I thought that was really salient by Coach Smart to bring in a social media expert. And he kept him from talking to you two guys, because you guys would tweet out anything. But it was good for the kids to hear that. I haven't had any feedback on how it happened. It just happened last night. But, you know, the national specialists on it. Now, that's great. So that's three things that maybe the fans didn't know about that we could hit them with. And
fans, hell, I didn't know.
I'm probably not telling you anything you guys don't
know. No, I didn't know that.
You're always doing that.
Yeah. Well, no, think about you bring in the social media specialist, and that's very important, because in today's age – it's very easy for someone to see something written and a player to respond to it. Now, all of a sudden, you have a story. Especially, and part of this is Kirby's own fault. When you cut down practice availability, the media is looking for something to write about. Mm-hmm. And any kind of tweet that could be considered a
I know that's a bird in your saddle about practice availability, but I mean, the reality is, it's pretty much the same thing everywhere now, especially the six coaches that were involved with Nick. I mean, they just got a lot of things going on they don't want everybody to know about. So
I'm not banging that bandwagon, and we can bring that up in another time and talk about how ridiculous it is at a public university that they give so little time. It's bullshit. I mean, it's insane. But the fact that you have a coach come in and say, look, if you guys tweet anything towards another school, if you tweet anything about a story out there, what if one of those players had tweeted anything about Urban Meyer?
Yeah, sure. It's really getting ahead of creating bulletin board material.
Exactly. You know, so it's very smart. Plus, he's all about, okay, guys, I want you to be successful in life. I want you to be successful in football. I want you to be successful in school. One of the things that you have from day one is your brand. Right. Take care of your brand. When's the last time you saw a ugly tweet by Sony Michel or Nick Chubb or any of those guys? They don't need to do stuff like that. So they took care of their brand. I go back to the Davin Bellamy humble yourself comment after a game. They talked about that for months.
Yeah.
You know?
But what I like about it, though, and you make a good point about it, is that this is a new year. Those guys are gone. Yep. Bellamy's gone. Michelle's gone. And all these guys need to understand that hey, this is this team. But I really wanted to give Kirby some love from the standpoint he's always very proactive about things. And that's been really a good point to bring up.
It is a very proactive move, because it's easy for the guys – what he's demanding all the time, leadership, right? And so some of these guys think, well, I need to be a more vocal leader. Well, maybe they're not being vocal while they're it's easy to be vocal when you have time to think about what you want to say, and they go to Twitter, they go to Instagram, they put something out, and all of a sudden it's like, ooh, you shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, and once it's done, it's done. And you're never getting that back. We're screenshotting it. Everybody's screenshotting it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
– and so on SB Nation and all these other aggregation sites, and everyone's talking about it, and then they're asked about it the next day in practice, and it just goes all to hell. So you – managing your social media – and we talk to recruits about this all the time. We're like, look, kids, you got high school coaches. They come to your school. They check your grades. They check your film. Then they check your social media. If you're doing something stupid there – you know, even if it's a rap lyric that someone else wrote, if you're repeating it, it's going to make you look bad. Nope. Yep. A lot of coaches.
Hey, Drew Locke's got some in eighth grade. They came back on him this week. I mean, yeah. Hey, you got to be careful.
Well, then that's the thing. So I like that proactive part there. I like the proactive part about getting these scouts to come in. Now, you saw some scouts. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I've seen a few floating around. And I was going to say, you know, you were talking about that, and kind of what that brought to my mind was, obviously, everybody remembers Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, Lorenzo Carter, Bellamy, those guys all making the decision to return. I think when you saw that play out in the draft the way it did, it looks like a home run as well. You know, right. For them to come back, spend that extra year, and especially when you put it up against somebody like Trent Thompson,
yeah.
Who could have come back for another year, probably boosted his stock, probably gets drafted in that situation. You know, you're setting a precedent with these guys. Hey, you don't have to go. We're going to get you the attention you want, though.
Right.
And, you know, I think that getting Baker that love early on really reinforces that point for these guys. Hey, the opportunities are still here, even if I do stick around.
And the other thing that I thought was really good about last year, going into the year last year, one of the real key elements was, could Isaiah Wynn be a left tackle? You know, and you see how he developed in our system under Chaney and Pittman and what they were able to see. And a guy that, like Bill Belichick, take him in the first round, you know he's got to,
yeah.
I mean, so the point is player development, player safety, player morale, all that goes into having a top five program. And, you know, we got the right guy running the show.
It's an attention to details, just like we've seen from some of our sponsors. You know, EuroPie has that attention to detail. Athens Ford does. Academia. Cable East, even though you can't buy anything from them, shout out to Robert Wall for out in Statham for having a fantastic company. Again, I've dealt with the guy. Attention to detail. You talk about the GPS trackers. You know,
yep.
And we thought that was kind of neat when they came out. And I actually had in the 321 report, I'll give folks who are not subscribers to UGA Sports, even though it's only 27 cents a day, a little tidbit of what we had in the 321 report. Over the first couple days, one of the fastest guys on the team was Tyson Campbell, the five-star cornerback. Now, what gets me about that, here's a guy who's – and we know he's a track star. And we've seen him running in track. We know he's fast. But where's the hesitation from a guy who's in his first couple practices? This is a guy – either he knows where he's going or doesn't know where he's going and is getting there bloody fast. In other words, I would expect that from a guy who's been in the program a little bit longer, who knows exactly what to do, and he's flying. But I didn't realize – so from the speed aspect of it, I think it's fantastic. But I remember Kirby Smart talking last year about some guys that were injured, and he said, look, we're limiting – actually, I think it was Lorenzo
steps.
Carter. Yeah, limiting the number of steps. They're tracking how many miles they run in a practice.
Yeah.
And we want him to only be – 2,000 steps or 3,000 steps, or when he's healthy, he'll be up to 4,000, stuff like that. And I'm like, and then now you're saying they have a real-time trainer checking these guys for heat. We were out there 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
I was drenched.
It's brutal. They're practicing in ridiculous heat. The humidity, and they got the wet bulb thing, you know.
They're always good about that. I also think in a case of a guy like Campbell, the fact that the summer training can't be overlooked anymore because the meeting time they get with them, the practice time that they get with the strength coaches, the 7-on-7 with the players that like Fromm running the show and Terry Godwin and then J.R. Reed on the other side. I mean, and their coach, Nauta, was coaching Ford and things like that. Those are invaluable that, to me – you know, just didn't used to have that. I mean, you could, your freshman, you know, everybody was really fired up about them because the first day you really knew anything about them was the first day they practiced 20 years ago when I was coaching. So you didn't really have an idea about their input. But to your point about Campbell, more than likely if he would have reported the first day, he would have never ran 20, would have never been able to run 22 miles an hour like he's capable of because he'd been confused.
Yeah.
But, just another point
that
I mentioned to Kirby.
With a head spinning around on the first day of practice because they don't even know how to do the drills. But these guys
are doing
like
that. Another point I mentioned to Kirby was that I thought was really impressive was the summer they did a lot of circuit training, you know, where they have what they call county fair type deal where you got eight different stations and every one is a football-related drill, but you don't have pads or football or anything because that's illegal. But working on things that will enhance your skills so once you start. and every player's going through those stations. And I thought that was really good, too, that we had that in the summer. I think they really – Sinclair is cutting edge on that. I mean, this guy right here.
I want to tell you about the PVC pipes.
Oh, yeah, the hand fighting. Yeah.
So, and I hate for people that are listening to this on the radio or listening to the podcast later on, this is why you should tune into the actual live show on Facebook at 11 Alive. But if you go to ujsports.com, click on day two of the photo gallery, you'll see they made these frames out of PVC pipe. They're rectangular frames with two bars in the middle, you know, two bars on the outside, two across the top, and two outside linebackers or inside linebackers each would grab two of the bars. And they push each other and pull, and they're trying to yank it away from each other and trying to move each other with this.
It's like that old tire drill, but it's a lot more intimate and more up here.
If you're doing the tire drill, it's down low, you're pulling. How often is that movement used in playing middle linebacker?
Right.
But getting your hands up there, trying to knock a guy out, you know, that's – we saw that. And shout out to Keon Richardson, who actually ripped one in half. So I think they either need to come up with a better glue or – take that kid out of the way.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't. Yeah, maybe we just let him sit that one out next time.
I'll just say, but again, it was a neat concept. Like you talk about that. Hey, okay, you can't do the official stuff, but we're going to give you a sledgehammer and a tire and let you go to town for a while and see what you can do. And I thought that, you know, here's something I've never seen before: these PVC constructed hand fighting tools, and that they were using, and so much so they actually used them at practice on day two. So very impressive.
Good point. Another point about the pro scouts. And I saw this back when we had guys at Oklahoma or here. When you got a guy walking around with a New England Patriots hat on or a Baltimore Ravens hat or a Buffalo Bills walking around, those drills sometimes get a little bit better.
Yeah, that'll motivate somebody.
Because the guy knows, hey, I better show him my stuff, you know. And not that they don't anyhow, but it's always a good vivid reminder about, hey, this is a program that's going to give you a shot to go to the league. You know what I mean? And these kids talk about it. I mean, so I think it's great that these guys are out there. And, you know, last year we had that one little blurb on our show, which I'm going to brag about some things we talked about. But when 3 weeks before we really were really good last year, that guy, general manager, told me he had been at every – pretty much all the top 20 teams in the country, and the only team that even looked even remotely to us was Auburn, Clemson, and Alabama. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it was nice to hear that our players look like that from a general manager.
I'm not talking about back in the spring.
I'm not talking about a scout. I'm talking about a general manager.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, so, we had the fan day practice on Saturday, the open practice. Obviously, we were there because it's the longest practice we get to watch all year. What were your takeaways from that day, Roddy? I know, Coach, you weren't there for that one, but
I slipped around a little bit.
Well, okay.
So go ahead and give us a takeaway, and then answer some questions.
You're asking that, so I won't keep eating all the sausage out of the sausage pickle.
I have one more. So
I'm on to you, Jake.
Yeah.
I'm on to you, Jake.
All right.
No, Brenton Cox stood out to me.
Me too.
Again, going up against Owen Condon with his new knee, I understand it's not the it's not the same as going up against
Andrew Thomas,
but I was very impressed with his abilities. I was also impressed with James Cook coming out of the backfield.
Yep.
That kid can fly.
Absolutely.
It reminds me of DeAndre Swift. He gets up to speed in just one or two steps and he takes off. Not the biggest kid. He's little. I mean, thin, but boy, can he really scoot.
Looks like Kamara.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Kamara's, you know, jacked up 4 years later, so it'd be interesting to see what kind of muscle he puts on that frame of his. But I think folks that are looking at – and don't get me wrong, Zamir White is a man. DeAndre Swift is a beast.
You talk about coming out of the backfield. We had a coach one time. He said, I can tell you one thing. That guy comes out of the backfield like he just had a gasoline enema.
That is a really good take on James Cook. He very much looks that way. I will say
I'll get back to you.
Away from these freshmen while Roddy recollects himself here. Away from the freshmen, though, I thought Brenton was spectacular. To me, looks like a guy that three and done. I mean, you can already see that in him, I think.
Same with Zamir White.
Demetrius Robertson, huge practice for him. Made one of the toughest catches we saw all day. Reeled in one in the backfield. A guy was all over him. In the back of the end zone. Reeled one in. Guy was all over him. Tough grab. I've seen him do it at practice now as well. He's got some soft hands, makes great catches.
I just don't see where some of these people are saying he's not really cut that well. He's got some pretty nice arms.
Oh, no, he's
I mean, they've never spoken to him.
He's in the shape he needs to be in.
He's not an Olympic lifter, but, you know, the thing that's good about this, too, is Terry, who I think is a really good player, has a little bit of a problem with his leg right now. So – smart by our coaches, trainers, everything. There's not a lot to be gained him going out there and doing all these drills right now. But he's right there with Robertson showing him everything. He's coach on the field, and he's getting the reps that maybe Terry would have get, and he's learning what to do, but it's not taken away from anybody that, you know, could use him. You know, certainly down the road, if Terry's not practicing in a couple of weeks, it'll be different. But I always liked it. I mean, as a coach, I always liked it when some of my better – Robert Edwards said he had a headache or something. I said, "Hey, Robert, you need to take a couple of days off, man."
Don't overwork yourself.
Want those guys out there getting slammed. I mean, you know, just get them to the bus. But I mean, there's a real fine line. You got to work them and all that, but you got to be careful. But I think Robertson getting those extra reps is going to help him what to do. And
I saw Mecole Hardman kind of doing the same thing with Tommy Bush, showing him some things.
You got to do that.
Yeah, Mecole, I don't even think anything was wrong with him yesterday. I wrote in the practice report, I think Cortez Hankton was like, yeah, you know what you're doing. Why don't you stand here and tell
especially in the drills guys are watching. It's not teamwork. They're learning how to work things. And excuse me for interrupting. That's important. Yeah. Important to – this is a learning process for these guys because we have the first scrimmage Saturday. And what they want to make sure of is a guy is good enough to not take away from the offense or defense and still be evaluated, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Good enough knowledge-wise, you know what I mean, where you don't have to tell him everything. Because once the band starts playing 11-on-11, the coaches aren't out there. So be a really good indicator Saturday of where some of these younger guys are. But
I want to jump in real quick, and one more guy I'll bring up. Justin Fields, thought he looked fantastic on the scrimmage. Well, not scrimmage Saturday, on the
open practice.
Open practice, he looked great. Also, watching Jamari Sawyer at center.
Yeah,
that could be fun.
Looks like a natural fit for him.
It does. I mean, I love Trey Hill, the idea of him being there, but I just think as big as his thighs are, how do you get the ball between them?
Right.
But him at guard, you know, and Warren Erickson is very good, but Jamari Sawyer at center, you knowing that you're losing Lamont Gallagher this year. That could be something to keep an eye on. But, of course, Justin Fields looked great. I mean, nice touch on the ball. Fromm looked great. Don't get me wrong. And I hate that because if I say one looks good, then someone says you're taking a shot at the other guy. No, I mean, Fromm has muscled up. He had great zip on the ball.
But you know what you're getting in Fromm.
Yeah.
He's doing some of the same things we've seen him do, and we know what he's good at, and he continues to get better at those things.
Yeah, but I think
he's
got more zip this year than he did last year.
I agree.
It's almost like Eason from year one to year two. Eason came out, and he had a cannon for an arm that came out as a howitzer the next year, maybe a little too much.
Fromm
came out a little
yoked some zip
up
on
and got a better zip on the ball.
I like the fact, though, if you just look back on Fromm's whole life, he really loves the challenge. And, you know, he's going to come out there and give you everything every day, regardless who's going against. But he knows he's got to prove his stuff with this guy, you know, breathing down his neck. And he's accepted that challenge, and he's going at it hard. And it's, as Kirby said, that's going to be a heck of a competition at a lot of positions. You know, I mean, you got Devontae Walker playing. I mean, he's a stallion, and you got Cox breathing down his throat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
and then, comes Adam Anderson.
And then you got – we don't even talk about Anderson, but six guys right out rattling off out of the box on defense that just make my mouth water when you look at them is Cox, Anderson, Tindall, Quay Walker, Reese, and Campbell. And Smith is a sweet little corner now. He can flop his hips over, can move. He's a good project from the project's wrong.
He gave Demetrius Robertson all he wanted.
He's a down-the-road guy that's going to develop with Tucker and Coach Tucker and Coach Smart helping him, and he's gonna. He's. I can see why we recruit him, but those six guys right now, go anywhere in the country and line up and play.
Absolutely.
Anywhere. I mean, Tindall, a human missile back there. It. I mean, maybe not fast as Roquan. I don't know, but I can. I guarantee.
Roquan wasn't that fast his first year.
10 or 15 yards. This guy can smoke, and then Quay Walker, grown man.
Absolutely.
I mean, come on. He'd walk up to me. I mean, he's a nice guy, but, I mean, this guy gets your attention.
Yeah. Well,
I'm more scared of Otis Reese, personally.
What about Otis? The word sir when he comes around.
Otis can scratch his ankles without bending his knees.
He is, man. Yeah, he's absolutely. Long. There's no doubt about it.
But I would have never thought when you first said it, maybe he's going to play safety, but he's such a good linebacker. But he really has that capability. But can you imagine? I mean, it's like having – Ed, what's the guy from the Ravens?
Ed Reed
back there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we talked one last thing before we holler at some of our sponsors and get some questions in here for sure. But we talked last year. One of my big things last year was that I thought the best thing to ever happen to Jacob Eason was Jake Fromm. I don't know that Justin Fields is necessarily the best thing to ever happen to Jake Fromm, but – it's the best thing that's ever happened to this team, in my opinion. Yeah. I think the competition that you're going to create between those two guys is going to be so tight, so hard fought. You're gonna get a gamer out of it.
I think you're right. I like the fact that when he was asked about it, you know, Justin Fields taking Fromm's spot, Kirby's like, well, yeah, you know, but then Tyson Campbell might take DeAndre Baker's spot, you know. Sawyer could take Lamont Gallagher's spot. You just named off all these battles.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, that's a good context. We only talk about the quarterbacks losing it, but, you know, DeAndre Baker's got, you know, some competition.
Well, nobody's going to lay down and waller in the ground if all of a sudden Zamir White goes out there instead of Swift. Or Cook goes in there.
But they lose their mind if the quarterbacks change.
Or Ford goes in. At tight end, you know, or I mean, so
if you rotate quarterbacks and you don't have any,
I just think everybody's got to take a chill on this and let it happen. I mean, that's why you got these boards and all, you know, and I think some people kind of got down on me when I said it was 50-50 on that. What I said 50-50 was just the fact that it's going to be a good competition. Certainly, Jake's got the edge and he deserves the edge, but yeah. People got to realize this guy is a very special talent. And we're going to look at him from a standpoint of, I mean, Georgia's going to look at him to see what he can do. But that doesn't – who starts the first game has not been set up for any position at this point, as far as I know. I mean, I like that competition between Wilson and Mays. I really like that. I mean, I like the fact that Tindall's out there challenging these guys all of a sudden at linebacker. I mean, you know, we got some holes there that got to fill, you know, but – the other thing I want to point out that I really like morale-wise is the way Patrick and Gibbs have come back and towed the line and done what they're supposed to and earned the right to be on this team. And they can both help us. There's no question about it.
Oh, you're right about Natress Patrick and D'Angelo Gibbs. We saw them both out there practicing, and there was a time I would not have believed that was possible.
Yeah.
So, guys with a good experience, and we talk about the defense needing experience, and they have it. Quick shout-out to Academia. I'm drinking their Dom Kolsch.
IQ IPA for me today.
I have the better one. But they're both really good.
For the child's palate.
If you have a chance to swing by Fuzzy's Taco Shop in downtown on Wednesday at 5, or starting at 5, Academia is doing a tap takeover. They're going to have five beers on tap, including the Sky Norwegian Farmhouse Ale, the Jana Juice IPA, the Objet Petit. I don't even know what it is. They're having a honey blonde. I can't say it because I can't pronounce fancy words. But swing by Academia. Swing by Fuzzy's Wednesday at 5 o'clock. The taco shop downtown Athens. They're having a tap takeover. You can get Academia beer there. Of course, for all the people moving into town, you know, all the parents, all the kids, everyone's coming to town to start school. swing out to academia. It sounds good for the – hey, look, Mom, Dad, can we go to academia?
Yeah, well, I, after a hard day of moving into a dorm, which is one of the worst things you could possibly do, or just moving in general.
Building a loft, trying to get
the 13th right. is the day, right?
Right. Mom's emotional because she's leaving her baby behind. She, you know, Dad's frustrated because the 2x4 won't go in the right place. Take them out. Get them a couple of beers at academia. Right. Loosen them up a little bit afterward.
Absolutely.
Get some Europe pie, too, and chicken.
Yeah, I was going to say, and for the kids coming into town, the parents, there's, I think, 4 different locations of Europe pie in Athens. There's 58 different locations across the country now. They're going. It's going global. Swing by Europe pie, get the Southern Heat. That's one of the best ones you can get. Or the Great White. That's also fantastic. Try their gelato.
Gelato.
Try their ice cream. It's fantastic.
And their fancy hams.
And their prosciutto. But no, it's swing by Europe Pie. They also carry a lot of local beers. You can get Creature Comforts in there. You can get Southern Brewing Company. You can get Academia. You can get Terrapin. You know, they carry a lot of the local beers, microbrew stuff, at the different locations of Europe Pie. The founder of Europe Pie and his wife are big Georgia fans, Drew French and Natalie. They will be front and center at every Georgia game, screaming their heads off, support the people who support Georgia if you're a Georgia fan. Again, speaking of Georgia fans, we got a big one in Robert Wall on Cable East and 365 Game Day. And again, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Athens Ford in a minute, but let's get some questions.
Okay. Let me ask you this right here, just for the fans. Let's put that 20-second deal on the answers here and see how many we can answer of us. 20-second answer.
All right, here we go. Mike Gates with an interesting question, a guy we haven't talked a lot about really since last season. Says, how's Charlie Warner looking this fall? He was really stepping it up there in the late season before that leg injury.
Well, he had a great game, particularly in the first half, and I think Charlie's right there with Anada. He does a good job and gives you all kind of different ways to use him, line up at tight end, put him in motion, line up at receiver, good on special teams.
Quiet guy, not going to make as much noise, not that big personality like Nada is, just a guy who goes out there about his business. I think it's a real potential for a breakout season for young Charlie Warner. Let's see here. Chadwick Ivory here, an interesting question. He says, Coach, how many games into the season is it going to take for some of the rookie class to get comfortable, especially on the defensive side of the ball, guys like Campbell, Cox, Anderson, Tindall, Wyatt? I assume it's different for each guy, but
– yeah, a lot of it has to do with what position you're playing and, you know, how much you're playing on special teams. But I think, again, going back to the summer, practicing like they did with the team, you know, without the coaches – they really know what to do. It takes a little while to get used to being in the stadium, but we got an advantage this year, Roddy. 7 games at home helps our squad. You know, when we go on the road, we can only take 70. So that's an SEC rule. So including the game at Florida, they have to take 70 and us take 70. So all our home games, we can dress out as many as we need to. So, you know, that's going to be a very difficult decision there, you know, that first game at South Carolina, the 70 we take.
Yeah, you're going to have scholarship guys hanging around. Yeah.
And all of them know they can play 4 games now. So that really is a tougher deal than it used to be.
Absolutely.
But I think there'll be those guys particularly the first opponent, Austin Pease, you know, has really developed. But I think a lot of these guys will get some really good playing time.
Mike Gates wants to know, how do you think the D-line unit stacks up as compared to the SEC?
Yeah, I just want to talk about the D-line real quick. First of all, I think Trey Scott's really has done a terrific job with his own coaching. Just from standpoint, he was good last year, but he's a lot more comfortable being in the system. He knows it a lot more. You know, stepping in last year as his first year, all these other guys knew it, you know, knew all the verbiage and all that. But he's a very strong on-the-field teacher. He's got a good relationship with him. And I think our depth is starting to build a little bit here with bringing in Hayes. I like our D-line. I like the competition. I like the leadership.
All right. Ab Harding here, he wants to know, if Georgia doesn't have an answer at the zero technique necessarily, would it make sense to move Tyler Clark in at zero and implement more one-gap principles?
Who's that?
Good question, Ab.
That's good there. Hey, that's good. He's pro cut. But, you know, I think Clark can play a zero. A zero technique's head up, one technique's on either side of the center. Clark was a little bit limited with an injury this spring in his leg, and they kind of protected him. But got great explosion, really good strength, can really jack up a center. I think he'll be the guy inside, but I'm not worried about that. I think depends on whether we play four down or three down, you know, if we play guys head up on the guards. But we got so many packages now, I don't even know how they get them all practiced, but we'll have a really good combination there.
This is a good one as well. Eric Mize wants to know, how's that punting situation looking?
I think punting situation looks a lot better than it did before. I was worried about it. I talked to Roddy about it before he went over to his trip, and I said, if you see a good kicker over there, bring him back with you. And obviously he didn't, but
hey, you don't know what I got coming. You have no idea.
All right, well, we could have used somebody from over there in Jordan, you know. But I think the main thing is Camargi's got a really good leg, thunderfoot's what I say. He can really bomb it. This kid from Middleton's, from Murray State's, is good too. I don't know what Long's situation is. I think Roddy had brought out that, you know, he didn't practice on the 110, which you can't – no need to have a kicker out there taking up a space. So he still has some injuries. But I think both these guys really give us a shot at having a very good punter. And our coverage teams are going to be out of sight. They're going to be fighting to be on the field there with those guys. So,
well, let's go back to what Kirby did. And if you go back to UGA Sports earlier in the week, we had a story by Patrick Garbin talking about Kirby is a master motivator. I thought this was a genius move to have all the kids report, you know, the team gets together, and he shows video clips of four players. Now, these are guys like Sony Michelle, Reuben Foster, guys like that, who they met certain criteria. One, they made big plays on special teams. Two, this was when they were true freshmen. You know, so coming in as freshmen, they made plays on special teams. I remember Sony Michelle flying down, making a tackle against Clemson. It was lights out. None of them started as true freshmen, even though a lot of them were five-star guys. Reuben Foster, five-star guy. Sony Michelle, five-star guy. But they all went in the first round of the NFL draft. You've got a room of 110 guys, 85 of them on scholarship, you know, what, 17 of them are five stars, another 39 of them are four stars, the rest are high three stars. I mean, an absolute packed room. There's no way to get all the five stars on the field at the same time, especially with that freshman class that had eight in there. But you tell them, look, have faith in me. I recruited this kid. I coached this kid. He made plays on special teams as a true freshman. He didn't start, but he played a lot. And by the time he was done in years three or years four, he was a first-round draft pick. I've done it, you know, multiple times. I can do it again. If you're not a starter, fight to be on special teams, right? Because you can get your name out there, you get the experience, and you show me that you're willing to put in the time, and we want to win. So I thought that that was a genius move by Kirby to say, look, even if you can't get out there, even if I only have you on special teams, you know, that's
not the
end
of the world.
Back
to what the guy asked about how long it take for him to get comfortable. Well, you get in there and get your feet wet. Another good point along those lines for our fans, with our indoor facility now, the people have had a chance to be in there. There's a big video board in there, you know, and sometimes during practice, Kirby will, when they're taking a break, he'll put something up on the video there. Okay, we're going to go over this drill right now, and this is the way we want to do it. And they'll show it to them. Now, usually they don't do it during practice, but they'll do it during, you know, like a walkthrough or something. Say, now here's the problems with this, and this is what we got to do. But, boy, a picture's worth 1,000 words.
Oh, no doubt.
And you see that right up there. And the same thing with practice organization. When they were getting ready to start practice, you know, a couple weeks ago, they say, now when we go from this drill to this drill, this could be a problem here because you're over here and you got to get here, but this is how you're going to get here. You know what I mean? But that's just practice organization and planning that indoor building, that's another way for you to see it right there very vividly, and it really has a good teaching point to it.
We got real off track about that punting situation, but that took a lot of time.
The punters are there, man.
Camarda, I was really impressed with Camarda on Saturday. His hang time was excellent. I was
4.75 seconds.
I was very surprised.
Yeah,
he can just stick one up there, and it seems like it's on a string. I mean,
and guy doesn't even know if he'll be punting, but maybe once a game. But I mean,
yeah.
Well, his one punt should hang up there.
No,
but I love the idea. Think about it. If you can get Tyson Campbell as your gunner on the punt team, and then, you know, DeAndre Baker, somebody like that on the other side, one of these fast guys, you know, heck, you set him up out there and say, Channing Tindall, go get this. And the ball snapped. And before he kicks it, what is that, 1.5, 2 seconds before it's actually punted? So they're getting off the block. You know, somebody's trying to jam them at the line. They take off. They're going to run 40 yards, 45 yards in about 4.5 seconds. We've seen the hang time is 4.75 on the 48-yard punt.
You ain't going nowhere.
I'm just saying that when the guy catches, it's going to be a lot of fair catches.
I think the biggest problem with him right now is don't outkick your coverage. I mean, he can kick it so far that, the big point is let's just hang it up there. But
let's see what he and Tyson can do together.
he's really a good find for us to have him. Another thing I want to point out before we get to another question is just what you guys get to go out there and is the size of our offensive line.
Oh, my God.
And the good thing about that, if you've ever watched the video on TV like we have it now, they have the wide shot, which is all 22 from the side, and then you have the one from the end zone where you're watching the guys stake their steps and all that. But if you get behind the defensive line and look over there at our offensive line just standing there and see them, and you've got to read your keys and you got to go find the ball and you got to do all that, and you got Isaiah Wilson at right guard and Ben Cleveland at right tackle, those guys on the left side of the defensive line, they need some binoculars to see through where to go.
No, it's a periscope, Coach.
Well, maybe it's a periscope. But they need something, but, I mean – I just think just from a – and we don't do a lot of stuff with our line. We don't do a lot of pulling. But just the mass there is going to really create a lot of action up front and get these little scooters going in and out. And, you know, I remember when Oregon State had that really good back that ended up playing for the Falcons sometime. You know, he was running the zone play, and like, people couldn't see him. You know, Southern Cal couldn't
tackle. Oh, Teron Ward.
Yeah, couldn't tackle him. Because you couldn't see the guy. So I think our offensive line size and ability, not to mention Thomas on the left-hand side, we need to like him while we can. You know, he's going to be here 2 more years probably, but what a talent he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And shout out to Kendall Baker. Everyone's been penciling Baker as the guy who's going to lose his job to Jamari Sawyer, Justin Schaefer, Natori Johnson. I mean, they've penciled in everybody's going to come take his job, and it may happen. I'm not saying it's guaranteed, but – if you saw the photo gallery we put up and you see this giant known as Isaiah Wilson, 6'7", 340, but says 325 pounds, next to Ben Cleveland, another, 6'7" guy, 340 pounds, two monsters. Lamont Galliard, who's the midget at only 6'3.5",
Yeah.
And then you got 6'5" Kendall Baker and Andrew Thomas, as we know, who's an absolute star. But Kendall looks to have hit the weight room extensively.
I like Kendall
this year.
He's got a burr in his saddle. Yeah. He wants to prove what he can
do. Well, he's heard it, and he's a big – I mean, he's a 1,000-megawatt smile guy.
That's where competition helps you, though, Rodney.
Oh, I agree.
He's embracing it.
If anybody beats him out, they will have brought their lunch because that guy's heard the news, and he's like, the hell you say? You're not getting my spot without a fight. And
good.
Knowing Kendall, I mean, like I said, he's the nicest guy on the team, just genuine and happy. But he will fight you when you come for his spot. So – if somebody does get it, you know that it was not handed to them, that they had to fight. Same with Solomon Kindley. Solomon Kindley fought off Ben Cleveland all year until the very end. Solomon didn't give it up he played hurt, and he was not about to give somebody else his spot. So if it does happen, Kendall Baker loses his spot, then you know that the guy coming in is an absolute badass because Kendall looks fantastic.
Really good question here from Ronnie Brown, a guy that gets overlooked a lot, but I think has made some meaningful steps
Ronnie
forward.
Ronnie Brown playing for Auburn?
I don't think so. I don't think
it probably is.
But he wants to know, do you guys see Tay Crowder pushing for meaningful snaps at inside linebacker?
Tay Crowder's been around. He knows the system. He plays hard. He's another guy that say he's not going to give it up easy. I like Tay. I like the way he plays. He's very good at lining up and knowing where to be, and there's a lot to be said about that. And he's a very versatile guy. He just doesn't have overwhelming stats as far as physical, stats. But he's a good, solid player that I'm glad we got on our team.
And I'm impressed with how well he's done at that inside linebacker spot. After originally coming in to be a running back, you wondered, would this guy ever make an impact anywhere?
But he got instinctive – player knowing what the offense is doing. A lot of time that's a big advantage for you, knowing protections, knowing all that. I like that move by Kirby trying to get him on the field. I mean, he'd have a hard time being a back here right now, and that's going to be a dog fight every week, those five guys. And now, I mean, come on. And I mean, I like the way Harrion's playing out there, and Holyfield and Swift seems like he's coming off his injury. White, the same thing, but again, Cook –
Woo. I told you, that kid can scoot.
He really can. And, remember how he comes out of there.
As for Tay Crowder, I will say this. Coach kind of stole my thunder there, but a guy who understands the offense and understands what the running backs are going to do, you know, I think
– very valuable.
It's just like when you see a Mark Webb who spends all that time at wide receiver, all of a sudden he jumps over to cornerback, and he knows what the routes are. He knows how these guys are going to push to get separation. He's anticipating it because, a year ago he was doing it. So I think that that may pay dividends for Tay Crowder, who is not as physically gifted as some of the other guys. But, hell, as you know, it's instincts.
Absolutely.
You got to watch those guys, though. They know the signals, and they look over there, and they say, okay, you're going to run this.
But I want to point out, we've somehow made it this deep into the show. We have not even scratched that Georgia picked up a commitment last week.
Did they?
From one of the top junior college players in America. We've been talking about Jermaine Johnson for long time. A fantastic player, a guy that many people believe possible one and done could come here and be that kind of impact maker. To bring a guy like that in, Coach, with what you've seen from guys like Cox, Anderson, that core group of guys, Beal, Walter Grant, that are going to be around next year, to throw a guy like that into the mix, I mean.
Well, you lose Walker, you'd like to have a upperclassman in that role, you know what I mean? That can really fight. So this is what you bring in there with a guy like Jermaine Johnson. So, and that's one of the good things about having a really good team is you can pick and choose your transfers, and you can pick and choose your JUCOs based on what your squad needs are. So I think it's a good move to be able to go after one of the top players in the country and get him in here. Essentially, with Robertson, Johnson and Hayes, we've been able to get three players added to our team. Of course, Johnson can't play till next year, but he will have three for two. But I wouldn't see him playing more than you never know.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
He could get hurt.
A lot of guns for hire out there. Georgia's doing a good job on the mercenaries.
And we continue to – we got a lot of guys out there that would like to commit, but I think they're taking a little slow right now, making sure that they get the right ones down at the end here because – here's the way I see it, and I used to talk to kids about this. We didn't have the early signing date like back then and all that, but there's a lot of kids that really get a lot better between spring and fall of their senior year.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? With summer practice, with growing, with the maturation of turning 16 to 17 or 17 to 18. So I always would hold and say, let's see how he transforms that to football playing on the field. Watch him in a couple scrimmages, watch him in a couple games, and then make a move on a guy. If you hadn't made it to this point, why not just, hey, we'll wait a little bit, see how you do, you know what I mean? And that's only fair to him. This is University of Georgia, we're selected. But if you want to come here and you can wait, you don't have to commit right now. Let's see how you do.
I agree. Speaking of committing and a smart move, I will tell everybody to go out to Athens Ford this month, the month of August. It's 0% financing. Just give you a couple deals real quick. You can get a 2018 Ford Focus for under $14,000, $13,999, 0% APR financing for qualified buyers for 60 months. So, what was that, 5 years?
Yeah, when are you going
to get me one of those? Way to go, 12 times
these recruiting trips.
It's $13,999. We can buy you one of those Ford. Ford Focus is a great car. The Ford EcoSport, $17,900. That's basically $6,000 off. Again, 0% financing for 60 months for qualified buyers. The Ford Escape, another great car. Again, $18,999. Another car for under 20 grand, brand new, 2018. 72 months, 0% financing for qualified buyers. 6 years. So I think there you're like $13 per $1,000 financed. I mean, you're looking at $250.
Easy there, saying, math guy.
I'm just saying, you're looking at like a $200-$300 car payment for 72 months with 0% financing. The one I really want, the 2018 Ford Explorer, $8,000 off.
Ooh, yeah. Make a move.
I'm just saying, I might do that this afternoon. 0%, 72 months. And best-selling truck in the world, the 2018 Ford F-150, $14,000 off.
Not bad.
0% for 60 months.
There you go.
Knock off $14,000, finance it at 0% for qualified buyers for 5 years. You just can't beat that. Oh, and if anybody wants one of those Super Duties, they're $8,000 off.
Everybody wants one of those.
I know, but I'm just saying. But that Ford F-150, I mean, for $14,000 off on a 2018 with 0% financing, that's just stupid.
Impressive.
So swing out to Athens Ford. Again, and they're huge, huge Georgia people, Georgia alums out there. They're going to have Harry Dog out at their at Athens Ford. I'll give you details on that later on. Be on from like 4 to 6. So if you want to bring the kids out to get a picture with Harry Dog when you couldn't get them at Fan Day, here's an actual opportunity to meet Harry Dog on in August. So
you know, a little known fact is that Jim Donnan is actually Harry Dog.
Everybody knows that. Come on.
I hate to give your secret away, Coach. Well, but you do a great job.
He supports the program any way he can. Coach,
somebody might really believe that, you know.
You mentioned maybe kind of telling us a little bit about RPOs, kind of giving us some fundamentals. The team is working on fundamentals now. I mean, they're not doing, or at least we're not seeing them do installs right now. They're working on getting their guys in place. So could you kind of give us a 3 or 4 minute little breakdown on one aspect of the game? You mentioned RPOs earlier. Maybe you can start there. Just kind of help us out.
Yeah, I think the install is one thing that we're talking about, the installment of the offense, defense, and kicking game. And you have so many things you're going to put in each day, and you tell the defense what you're putting in so they can defend it. But you're really more concerned about teaching your part as compared to winning a drill you're really teaching your system, and you want to go so many a day and then cut back for the scrimmage and keep adding to what you'll need for the year, and then you've already practiced it going into game plan week. But as far as the RPO, I think it's one of the biggest transitions in college football, and now the pros are using it. You saw the Eagles do a great job against the Patriots with it, but it's a standard situation where they say RPO is run pass option, and what it does is you call a run with the idea it's going to be a run unless you really don't like what the look is up front. The linemen, no matter what, block the run. They don't have to worry about pass pro showing pass or anything. Even if it's a counter play, the guard and tackle are going to pull, or if it's a zone play, they're going to do it. It's up to the quarterback to see what he thinks the defense looks like. We'll start out on the goal line. Let's just say we're on the 7-yard line and we're going to call an inside zone play. But we look on the perimeter, and one of the guys is in kind of coverage that we would like, that we feel like we can throw the ball to him on the type of route we want. And usually on the goal line, the two routes you'll run is a fade route or a fade stop, you know, where you throw the ball to the back shoulder. So you go up to the line, and they're kind of overshifted to the line of scrimmage where you're going to run the play, but you got good coverage on one side or the other. So the receiver's going to run it no matter what. Even if it's a run, he's going to run that route. So it's all based on the defensive back. So let's just decide that Jake Fromm has decided he's going to throw the ball to Terry Godwin, and everybody on the team, the other 9 players, are running the inside zone. Terry Godwin's going to run a fade based on this. When he gets to the goal line, if the defensive back's heels are in the end zone, then there's a pretty good chance he's going to be able to defend the fade. You know, he's got him. He hasn't beaten
him
off
the line.
He's got the
room. He's got that. So he's going to run. The quarterback's going to throw the ball to his back shoulder, and you know, basically throw it at his ear there, and he's going to go back and catch it because that guy's out of position covering him. If at the goal line he's got a man, you know, head up on him as far as side to side, then the quarterback's going to throw the ball on a 2x2 box in the end zone in the corner, and that's going to be the throwing point for him. And that's where Terry's going to go up for the ball. So there's a lot of variables there, but really the two variables is whether it's going to be a fade back shoulder or a fade, and the rest of it's going to be a run accordingly. So that's, and the line's blocking it like that. Now let's go out to the field. Let's just say we're on the 35-yard line. We have every run that we call is – I'm not going too fast, right?
No, okay. No.
Every run that we call, we're going to have what we call a tag. I'm not talking about just Georgia. We're going to tag the receivers with some kind of route just in case the run doesn't look good. Now, it used to be you'd go up there and the run – look bad and you'd have to check off. You know, you go from one play to another. But with the crowd noise and all that, so it takes away a lot of the game planning and the fact that you're going to get in the best play most of the time. So if the coverage is kind of off and the front is taking away the run, then they'll have a short route like a hitch on one side or the other, and the quarterback just take the ball and they'll just throw the, you know,
so
5 yards.
So the receivers are running that route regardless.
You saw in the Rose Bowl starting out the game, we had a couple hitches right off the bat. Those are run plays, run pass options, and hey.
And the Lions blocking the same regardless.
Yeah, Jake just took it, you know. And then the other thing would be a seam route with the inside receiver. If the jack or the strong safety or the nickel guy or the star, whatever you want to call him, is overplaying the hitch, then you try to throw that seam in between the linebacker and the safety where he can catch it on the dead run. So you would tag most of them out in the field, maybe not a deep route with it because it's a wasted play if you don't hit it, you know what I mean? But let's just say we got a guy that we know we can beat, and we will say that defensive back, we're sending you a Western Union, please play us bump and run man. You know what I mean? So you would say then the RPO, we would just give a little signal, hand signal out to the guy. Instead of, you still have the tag on for the hitch or the slant or the seam, but if all of a sudden they come up and play really tight, we run the same running play, but the tag turns to a nine route, which is an up or a fade. Now, the coaching points on that, and I'm finishing up here, is at 17 yards, okay? If we're even, we're leaving. So he's going to throw that ball 42 to 48 yards deep, and we're going to let it go, all right? But if all of a sudden at 17 yards that guy is still backed up, and we're not going to try to overthrow a guy that's backed up, then we're going to throw the back shoulder fade like he hit Wims all year last year.
I was going to mention Javon Wims killed at this.
And he did it in the other night for Chicago. So we're going to throw that ball. Both of them are going to decide at 17 yards that now it's going to be a back shoulder, and we're going to try to hit it between 25 and 29, depending on the speed of a guy. You know, it might be a little bit more for Robertson because he's going to get down the field. But that's between the quarterback and – but basically, you're not wasting a play on a run – where you can't block them all, and you're not wasting the play on a pass where you're throwing a hitch or the seam. So it's a really good concept, and it really helps your protection where your receivers are going to get the ball pretty quickly. You don't have to block everybody, and it's one of the biggest changes in football ever, and I like it.
Good.
I hope I explained
it. No, you did. I feel like I learned a lot because I didn't realize that the line wasn't changing their assignments.
I'm going to have to go home and listen to you do that about three times and draw it out.
I was trying to make it vivid. I didn't.
No, you did great. You did great.
With the hand signals, I thought, you know, I was, from my own old experience 100 years ago, I'm thinking, if I'm down in my stance and I'm trying to look back over some other guy's big butt to see what the hand signal is, who's getting it. And I'm like, I don't understand how this
but
works.
But now so, they stand up, though. They don't use the old three-point stance. Yeah. Because you see so much press coverage, if you're in a three-point stance, you can't get around the guy. The guy's going to eat you up. So now, and you tell your receivers, if they're in a press coverage, don't lean into him and make it easy for him. That's why the closer he gets to you, the more I want to stand up so he doesn't have as much to hit. So I think there's a lot of coaching points there, but you know, the biggest deal there that I think is you're going to take what they give you, and you got a guy like Jake that does a tremendous job of doing that. And we've seen the same thing with Justin. He's learning how to do it. But it helps your line, too. You know, we used to have a lineman where we call play action pass. Well, you try to make it look like the run and then pass protect. It's hard to do, you know.
No doubt.
Well, you have one guy who would forget, who'd run downfield, and all of a sudden you have a legal man downfield, and you're like, what are you doing 17 yards down the field when there's a pass play, and even though that touchdown's coming back because he just forgot for one second.
So. But I will say this, that with our team and our skill level and our line this year, we might not call as many run-pass options on certain runs because it doesn't make any difference what they're in. We're going to run that ball. So only way you'd change that, there wouldn't be a tag with it, okay?
Yeah, just
so when you hear a tag as a receiver, you're going to run your route. But if you don't have a tag, then you got a blocking assignment.
Absolutely.
Got that?
Yeah, that did because I was going to ask about so these receivers are always running their routes regardless. I'm like, then why was Wims knocking people to the ground?
if you've got a tag, you run it, but if not, your assignment's to block. So we'll – and some – what we might get the fans to do once in a while is ask for something that you want us to explain, and maybe we can do it, but it's not any big deal.
We might need to get you a whiteboard. That would be awesome.
Yeah. One of my buddies said that – because I don't read the site – said some guy said, well, I don't explain why Quincy threw four or five interceptions versus South Carolina. And I wish I could tell you that. same reason he threw 17 straight against LSU. I mean, hey, who knows? But they ran some really good zone blitzes, and we didn't recognize it. And I'll take all the blame for it. But I certainly didn't say, hey, Quincy, throw it to him.
Well, this was here's my pet peeve. And again, when we do our grades at the end of each game, you know, Paul Meharry will come on. We'll kind of give our input on some of them. But we always get criticized for not grading the coaches. And I always tell people, we're not going to do that. Not so long as I'm in charge of UGASports.com.
WRL, man.
And it's not that I defend the coaches, because I rip them as much as anybody else. But my thing is, if I don't know what the play call is, then how the hell am I supposed to grade a coach?
Yeah.
On
how the guy's executed. And
right.
Yeah.
And even then, even doing grades, it's a guess on our part that the guy was doing what he's supposed to and that he failed at it. So pushing the limit on what we can give as analysis, but then to do the coaches. And the reason I bring it up, Coach, and let you get your point in, was I mentioned we finally got to speak to Jim Chaney and Mel Tucker. It's fun to hear from the offensive and defensive coordinators of Georgia. And I mentioned that in Jim Chaney's first year, people hated him. His second year, he was a genius. And I had people complaining, well, if he's such a damn genius, why didn't he run Sony Michel in the fourth quarter against Alabama? And I'm like, wait a minute. He got you to an SEC title. He wins you the Rose Bowl. He gets you to the national championship game. And it's almost like Terrence Edwards. You're going to remember the one thing that you think was his fault that eradicates all his success. You know, so, well, you know, Coach Dunnan had, you know, one of his players threw four or five interceptions. Yeah. Guess what? It's called football. It happens, you know.
So I don't think it's what he wanted.
did you tell him to throw it to the other guys? No. So, again, I saw this with Jim Chaney. We've seen this with Georgia players. If Billy Bennett misses a field goal, I think maybe it was the South Carolina LSU where he missed two or something. I'm forgetting who it was back then. If it wasn't Billy, I'm sorry. And they forget that, you know, he's still one of the greatest kickers of all time, but they still bring up the fact the one time he failed, you know.
Sure.
I got to give you a quick story. When I was working here in the second year, I went down to a speech in South Georgia and had a question and answer. And this lady in the back, she had to be close to 80 years old. And she said, Coach D said, why'd you tell Robert Edwards to fumble against South Carolina? Like that, and I said,
that was our plan.
Hey, and I said, I'm going to tell you exactly what I told him. And she said, okay. I said, Robert, I want you to line up a little deeper there on 34 gut, and I want you to run into the right, and I want you to run right into Matt Stinchcomb's butt and see if you can hit him, and so it'll knock you off. And then you spin off, and then I want you to run in that linebacker, and I want that linebacker to grab that ball out of your hand and let you would let him take it. He did exactly what I told him to.
He's a good listener.
Yeah. Good job, Robert. Glad you did that. And, Matt, thanks for standing there and letting him hit you square.
How about Robert, new coach now? Well, he's coaching over in Atlanta now.
Yeah, Riverwood. Yeah,
and he's got his daughter going to school at UGA. And
good stuff.
That's awesome.
And I actually covered him before his previous stop. So we're going to get down to Riverwood and catch them in a game. Probably when they take on Kennesaw State or Kennesaw Mountain.
A lot of stuff today. Yeah. We didn't get it all in.
So we're going to be picking them up later on. But anyway, that's it for this week's show. Tune in next Tuesday at noon. We will have a lot more for you. For Jake Roos, Jim Donnan, I'm Ryan DeBulsey. Tune in next week. We'll see you then.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.